Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with S.D. Smith. S.D. Smith is the author of the Green Ember series, a million-plus selling adventure saga featuring heroic rabbits with swords. The Green Ember spent time as the number one best-selling audiobook in the world on Audible. He is also the author of the madcap Mooses with Bazookas and other stories children should never read, as well as a fantasy adventure novel co-authored with his son, Jack Zulu and the Waylander's Key. Smith's stories are captivating readers across the globe who are hungry for new stories with an old soul. Though packed with old-school virtue and moral imagination, Smith doesn't merely create safe stories, but bold, daring, truthful tales of light that help shape children who become dangerous, dangerous to the darkness. S.D. Smith lives in Grandview, West Virginia, with his wife and four kids. Sam, welcome to the show.
I am so delighted to be here. Thank you for having me, CJ.
I am so excited to have you. Today, we are going to be talking about Sam's Waylander books, which he wrote with his son, Josiah. And I read the first book, Jack Zulu and the Waylander's Key, about a year ago, and I loved the story. I thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it. And when I started this podcast last summer, you were one of the authors that I was like, one of these days, I'm going to have Sam on this show to talk about your Waylander books, because I just enjoyed it so much and I knew my readers would love them as well. So if you wouldn't mind, could you share with our listeners a little bit about your Jack Zulu books?
I would be delighted to. Thank you so much. I learned a lot doing 10 books in another series called the Green Ember series. And my son, Josiah, he had been working on his own sort of TV show, movie sort of stuff. That's sort of his inclination since he's pretty young. He's loved storytelling in general, but maybe particularly like film and TV shows, that sort of thing. So he was writing a treatment for a TV show and he spent a lot of time on it. And I would, you know, speak in and out of it a little bit here and there. And eventually we had this kind of conversation where I said to him, you know, if you want to actually get this on the screen, it might be the best way to do that, might be through a novel, just because my own experience with speaking to sort of movie people was they're a lot more interested if you have something that already exists and already has a sort of an audience and that kind of a thing. It's a lot different conversation than just coming to someone with an idea. So I was thinking about a way to sort of establish that intellectual property, established the story in some kind of a form so that it could, you know, become what he wanted it to be. And I just said, if you want to novelize, if you want to try to turn this into a novel, then, you know, that's something I sort of know how to do. We've have a little bit of experience. So if you want, I can help you with that and you can work on it. And I can just do my best to help you, or we could do it together. And he opted that he was excited about us doing it together. So we kind of came together and some of the things changed, some details. It got a little bit more like me. I think probably the African element in particular, that, you know, Jack Zulu is a boy caught between two worlds already, even before he goes through this sort of magic portal kind of a situation. So he was already kind of half Zulu. His dad was a Zulu from South Africa and his mom was a Appalachian, you know, from rural West Virginia. So he's already kind of caught between two worlds, which is mirrors my own story. So I lived in Africa as a kid and West Virginia the rest of my life. And so it was kind of caught between these two worlds, had that experience, which maybe a lot of like MKs, or I think they call them third culture kids now.
Yeah.
Which is to say that you have like, is it third culture or second culture? Did I mix?
Third culture kids. Third culture, yeah. Kids.
I'm not sure how many, there's three. Anyway, whatever it is, they have a different culture. So they're very weird kids, as I can attest by myself, and very interesting people, I think, in some ways. So my sort of history and experience and whatever sort of meshed with his enthusiasm and insight, and we started creating these stories together. And the first one, Jack Zulu and the Waylander's Key, was a real partnership and I loved it and I really enjoyed it. And then the second one, Jack Zulu and the Girl with Golden Wings, just came out very, very recently. And that's been another joyful trip. It's a story about three friends. It's kind of got that sort of, I don't know if it's a cliche or tried and true, however you want to look at it, trio, you know, sort of a Kirk and Spock and McCoy, and you see these kind of Harry, Ron, and Hermione, or you've just got all these sort of different stories where there's these sort of trilogy. trio of people, and sometimes it's a duo, but there's often a third. And so anyway, this, we have these two friends, Jack and Benny, and then their friend Michelle, and they sort of get caught up in these adventures, and it's a good time, I hope.
It's definitely a good time. It's a lot of fun, and I think the trio of characters adds a fun element as well, because Benny's personality is so different from Jack's, and they complement each other well, and Benny adds some funny moments into the story, and Michelle is so different, and so when they all come together and enter this other world, this other place, I think it just adds an incredible adventure to the mix, because often that's how it is in life, in the greatest adventures, right? We go into them with people who are different than us, and what makes the adventure stick with us forever is the people we've experienced it with more than the adventure itself, quite often, I think. So I think that the trio, it's, let's call it tried and true instead of cliche, because that just feels more, you know, it feels nicer, right?
I totally agree with you that I love, and difference is interesting to me. Like even as a writer or storyteller or whatever, observer of life, like I love difference. Like that's what makes the world go around. So there's a lot in modern culture that wants to sort of flatten people into sort of into sameness in so many ways. And we don't, sameness is boring. It's so bad. And actual true diversity is so good. And yes. So, and limits and differences makes for such interesting care. So I totally agree with you. The fact that Jack and Benny are so different is what makes that work, I think. And I agree with you. That's the best part about every kind of story that you love. It has those elements and in relationships. Yeah. Even from like romantic relationships to like everything. I mean, you know, even like little kids are so different from each other, and they're different than adults and old people. And there's just different cultures are interesting. So yeah, I love it. We often want to flatten differences and sharpen edges, so everything's so smooth and everything, but the contrasts are so fascinating, and also limits, like people, when we aren't as gifted in something as someone else, that is such an opportunity to learn, to grow, to work together. Our weaknesses are so often places where we find strength. Weakness is almost like a necessity, like this fundamental necessity for us to live lives that aren't bound up in our own sort of arrogance and our own the mere capacity of ourselves. You know, that's such a selfish sort of orientation. So I love the difference. I love the metaphor of the body of Christ and hand can't say to the eye, I don't need you. We all need each other. And I love that about stories. That's why I think Christians can be such excellent storytellers, is because we have this accounting of reality of the way relationships can work and ought to work. I think, and there's a place for every kind of different person, you know, I love that. There's a, you know, whether your vocation is modest or it's very, very public, or, you know, there's a place for it, whether you're quiet, whether you're loud, whether you're the mouth, whether you're the hand, you know, there's just so many places. There's places for single people. There's places for married people. There's places for children. Old people have dignity, and we honor them. And so there's just a place for in this community. And actually, a lot of my storytelling is about that. It's about community and about vocation. And so I love that. I love sort of the Christian vision for community. And I think it's a beautiful thing. So yeah, I'm with you. I agree with you. Viva la difference. Is that how that
works? Hey, it works for me. I don't know how it's supposed to be said, but it sounded good. And I agree. I think that's one of the beautiful things about God, is that he created diversity. He on purpose made people different. And it's so that we can each reflect a different aspect of him and his character, because he's somebody we could never fully comprehend, but we all get an opportunity to reflect him in different ways as we grow in him. And we become the most who we were meant to be, the more we follow after him and give ourselves over to him. And in that, what's so incredible is I think the world would say that if you follow God, you're just going to become like this flat person. But the reality is, the more you follow God, the more your own personal identity and personality can flourish and come to life. And you can be uniquely you, because God created you for that. And as you're going back into following him in the way you were intended to from the beginning of time, the more you can better actually find that identity and that purpose, and that vocation can be something that is helping a whole like you said, it comes together in this community that's incredible. And that community is every tribe and tongue and nation praising God at the end, right? And glorifying him. And until then, doing a work that couldn't be done if it was all the same people who looked the same with the same exact personality and the same exact jobs. And, you know, that's not how God's kingdom works. It works through diversity. And I love when stories can show that diversity in a really unique way and highlight it and the power that's in that. That, yes, we have our strengths, but we have our weaknesses. And it's so that, like you said, we can't be lifted up in pride and arrogance. People who think they've got it all together and they're the best thing in the world, no one likes to be around that person. Like, they're really not the most enjoyable person. The people who can be like, okay, I'll humbly acknowledge my strength, but I'm also going to be real about my weaknesses. Those people are the ones that you actually can work with and enjoy being with and live life alongside of in a way that makes life worth living, right? Like, because we get to do it with others in that kind of community. I'm all about that diversity and that how it was intended to be, like you said, not flattened like the world wants to, or divisive like the world wants to make it, but actually coming together in a way that we can do something we could never have done on our own.
Yeah. Because we lack, right? Because God is infinite, but we are finite. So we are like missing stuff as far as like if we want to accomplish things. And I think that's the arrogance of, I think that's such a powerful thing. My pastor once preached a sermon about like, he talked about how we need unity, not sameness, oneness, not sameness, I should say. So we need, there is a sense in which we are one in the body of Christ, but we are not the same. And that's a gift. And God has this infinite diversity almost within his own character and this in his infinitude. But we have this almost, we have this very specific, very limited sort of finitude of our own existence. But it's it is a gift. It is a gift. And it's we are not God. And remember that God is in heaven, you are on earth. And so let your words be few. There's a sort of invitation to humility in that. The whole Christian story, like God is the one who made the blazing hot sun that could fit how many a million Earths in the sun. The sun is this massive and would destroy anything that came anywhere near it. And he makes little bumblebee wings, you know, and beautiful flowers and massive, enormous icebergs and mountains, and there's this hardness and starkness, and then there's this beautiful softness and tiny detail and tenderness, and it's all true. Lightning and lightning bugs, and it's that they all make sense in this world and of seemingly infinite diversity, just in what we see and experience. So I love it. I love the world that God has made and the beings that God has made and the invitation that he's giving us to, like you said, sort of like in a sense participate with him. And even storytelling, I love that it's like this. I feel like we're just like me and you, we're these little artists who are just like, hey, you know, daddy, look at this crummy painting. Yes. And he's like, that's pretty cool, you know, I mean, because we're like him. That's what he does. He speaks and worlds come into existence. And he speaks, and we do the same thing all the time. We do it in our relationships, we do it in whatever we speak, and all of a sudden, and there's a new world, and we do it sometimes quite literally with storytelling, but it's all just a reflection of our Father and our relationship with him and these little fractured shards of light that we're carrying when he is the sun.
Yes. Yes. I know I like to say sometimes that it's like if you have a kid that you invite into the kitchen with you to cook, and you know, like they think they're helping, but they're kind of making it a mess. But yet for them, it's this exciting experience. I feel like that's how I feel when I sit down to write a story. I'm like getting to walk into the kitchen kind of thing and stir this up, and I'm making a mess, but God's right there, you know, like encouraging me and allowing me to be a part of something bigger than myself, because he's the ultimate creator. And when I can enter into that with him, it's this incredible experience for me. And it's helped me grow in my relationship with him and see him in new ways. It's been incredible in that sense. It's all because we serve a God, like you said, who creates, who has all this diversity. And we get to experience that as we walk on this earth, as we follow after him and in the different things he's called us to. So I love it. I'm right there with you. It astounds me and amazes me and gets me excited too, because I just love to see how we can better know this God that we serve, who is infinitely greater than anything our human brains could comprehend. You know, if we saw him, we would die. There is just nothing in ourselves that could bear to understand fully the God that we serve. And yet he allows us to glimpse him in different ways so that we can understand and follow him and love him because he first loved us. You know, it gets me excited. And I enjoyed in your story how you took this boy who felt like he was torn between these worlds and didn't really feel like he belonged where he was, or felt like he was, you know, stunted in his growth and ability. And then you catapult him into this whole other realm, which is very cool. I love that. I'm not really sure how much I can say without spoilers, but I loved the way he grew through the story and like how he began to embrace things that he wanted to reject before, and how his friends could speak into him, and he had this mentor character, and there are these different elements that allowed him to grow and then see where he was originally in a new light by the end of the story. And that's one of the things I love about books, is how they can let us glimpse life in new ways. Yeah. And you do that so well with Jack Zulu. And I love that you did it with your son. That's such a cool thing that you guys could do that together. But what was that like, developing this character with Josiah and having him go through these character arcs and all of these different things?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head as far as the heart of the story is. That's what it really is about. I love G.K. Chesterton so much. And he talked about that fairy tales show us apples that are golden so that in the real world, we can remember that they're green. Mm. And apples show us that the rivers run with wine in fairy tales so that we can remember for one wild moment that the so-called real world, they run with water. And that's a paraphrase. He says it a lot more eloquently. But the whole idea of like the best kinds of stories wake us up to reality. Basically, they are an invitation to reality. And so I think they're the exact opposite often of what the sort of the cliche understanding of what storytelling is as in a distraction from the truth. I think the most faithful stories are not, as my friend Heidi Johnson said, and I repeat this all the time, it's not an escape from reality, they're an escape into reality. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that's true, that the most faithful stories don't subtract truth, they add meaning. That one, there's a reason why the Bible is full of stories and music and songs and lyrics. And it's an artist's book, and it's full of art. And that includes massive amounts of narrative. And some of it's even made up narrative, you know, that it's that isn't like history, but it's still true. And it demonstrates that it's possible to tell true stories that didn't factually happen, and true meaning faithful to reality, honest. And you know, if the Lord made up a story, and some people argue about that, but if the Lord made up a story to sort of say something, that it's true. It's not, it may not have happened. Maybe it did or didn't, I don't know. But I just think that the power of stories is so profound. And that whole thing about like sort of being able to see something for the first time, that's really what Jack experiences. And I think that's what you're talking about, is that he is able to go on an adventure where he's able to see for the first time some things that were familiar to him and to see them with new eyes. I think travel can do that for you in general. You know, there's the whole thing about sort of like absence makes the heart grow fonder and that kind of a thing. There's some natural ways in which that works on us. But I think that being able to sort of, when we go on an adventure, whether it's vicarious through a story or in our own lives, like I think that opens up our eyes in ways that other experiences don't. And I mean, my hope is that, like Jack, the readers of my stories, our stories, particularly the Jack Zulu books, is that readers will be able to sort of see and receive and to have that, go on that journey vicariously and be awakened to wonder and be awakened to gratitude and to awe. I mean, that's really kind of the heart of this story, is sort of like, I think some people, because the story is really rooted in West Virginia, like small town West Virginia, which there isn't another variety of town in West Virginia, really, other than small town. There's degrees, but they're all pretty small. But yeah, to waking up to sort of appreciating that, and that's something that's happened in my life. But really, it's not about like everybody falling in love with West Virginia, even though obviously everyone should. But but it's like fall in love with your own place and fall in love with your own, you know, your own mom and your own friend and the people that God has given you in your life and the place that God's given you and to receive. It's an invitation to receive. And I think we are in a culture of consumers. And I think we should be a culture of receivers, and because God is giving all the time, giving sunlight, giving food, giving water, giving air, giving breath, giving friendship, giving employment, given, you know, or vocation, maybe more properly, given community, you know, giving himself, like, quite in very tangible ways. And so we are receivers. That's like a good thing, to be a receiver, you know, to be just a consumer or just to be a taker or whatever, or a grasper, that's different, but to be a receiver. So anyway, I think this story is an invitation to that. I think you've nailed it with describing, you know, what Jack experiences. And I'm talking about in these really philosophical terms. It's also just like a kid who goes and gets an adventure and fights a monster and has a crush on a girl and has fights and gets embarrassed and loses and gets beat up and, you know, and wins and slips through just in time. And there's all that stuff too. Uh-huh. And that's really, I mean, I'm not even really, yeah, it's not a theological or philosophical treatise, but it is, I think, underneath, like, not even underneath, like right there. It's an invitation. It's an invitation to wonder. It's an invitation to love. And I'm not apologizing for that, CJ. No. I know you're trying to tell me to apologize.
No, never. I love that. No,
you know, like you're accusing me. But
no, not at all. I love that. And I think that how you put it, we are a culture of consumers when we should be receivers. And I do think as we receive from God, there needs to be an attitude of understanding. If I'm receiving, it's like a gift, right? Because it's somebody giving me something. There's a gratitude that should come with that. There's a understanding that this is not from me. This is not my ability that's achieving it or anything like that. And as we receive and then embrace where we are, like, which is a lot of the theme in Jack Zulu, then there's a contentedness that can come in that, even if life is hard, even if we have difficult things. Like, Jack experiences some really hard things in his life. He's gone through difficult things. He's facing some hardship. But when there can be like a settledness in our spirits, which I do think comes from that receiving, right? It's that grateful receiving, that settledness and contentment that comes with that, as opposed to just consuming and trying to take all I can from life. It's a totally different mindset. And when Jack, his mindset essentially changes to that receiving mindset by the end of the story, and then he can embrace where he is in a way he never could have when that story begins. And I do love the invitation in that story for the reader to actually do that in their own life. And this book is so much fun. So for my listeners, like, you're right, it's not a theological treatise. It's not that, but it's an incredible fun adventure. You get lost in it. It has those Chronicles of Narnia kind of vibes to it, where you're going through this portal into another world. But at the end of the day, when you sit back and think about the story, there's a lot to think about. And I think those are the best theological moments, really, because they're the ones that get to our heart. I can read a nonfiction theological book, which I do at times. That's not part of my life. That was a double negative, but you get what I'm saying here. However, the stories are the things that make me cry. They're the things that touch my heart, because they get past those mental and emotional barriers that we put in place because we know it already. You know, I can read a nonfiction book and know it already, but once I hear a story, that can pierce my heart. And I think that's what I love about books. And it's one of the things I loved about Jack Zulu, because it does, it gives you a reason to think and pause. And one of the things I like doing on the show, by talking about these deeper themes and hearing your heart, the author's hearts, is for our readers, hopefully then they can go read Jack Zulu and The Waylander's Key and find that adventure, but then have a reason to stop and think afterwards as they remember this conversation, because there's so much in that story worth thinking about and stewing on and then applying to our own lives, and hopefully taking some of the heart of what Jack learns and it being something that we learn as well and then can take back with us into our day-to-day lives.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've had that experience a lot often myself in reading, and I want it more, and I want to give it more. And I that's definitely my heart. And I think the reason why a lot of like my Green Ember stories tend to sort of work with parents and with kids is I think that those sort of both things are going on, and not in an allegorical sense at all. I'm not really an allegory writer at all, but in a sort of like a a reality kind of a thing. I think if you tell really faithful stories and try to do a good job telling the story, I think that those realities are going to bubble up, as Lewis said, or not Lewis, Tolkien said, from the leaf mold of the mind, that it's hard to sort of direct that. But I think what you love and what you care about is going to come through pretty deeply. And God has done so much more in my storytelling than my cleverness could have like invented. I think if I had been, I'm really not a, Tolkien talked about distrusting allegory and saying he much preferred applicability with the varied experience of readers instead of sort of the purposeful domination of the author. And I tend to sort of be in that school. I tend very strongly to be in that school. And I think if I had been more of a, I would like to dominate my readers, even with good intentions. But I think if I had been more of that, like more of like, I'm going to wrestle in, I think I would have been so much less effective than the sort of the generous disposition of just telling a good story and telling, but telling faithfully, not lying. And my own experience has been that the Lord has used so much more and done so much more in that work than I think would have been possible had I tried to manhandle it and like wrestle it into my own shape. I think the simple act of loving my own kids and giving them a gift by telling them a story, I think that's been much more potent with its knock-on effects and its varied applicability and varied sort of harmony with reality of a capital R than anything I could have wrestled into space. And that's not to say that we shouldn't have sort of a, you know, the people can't write with a idea in mind or a theme in mind or that kind of a thing. We probably did that more consciously with Jack Zulu than we did with anything else. And I think that part of that's because of my son's work in the training in the sort of the film world, which is like, it's so different than being a novelist because you got 300 people working on a film, you kind of have to like be able to say, what's this about? Right. You've got to have the clarity of having those clarifying. So I've never had those before as a novelist, anything like it, but I think he's helping me to sort of like, this is how this is being more, and his argument would be like, well, you've always had them. You just didn't know what they were.
Right.
And what I want to do is tell you what they are. So there's all kinds of different schools of thoughts about that kind of thing. But I think that the broadly generous disposition of an author, I think within a heart of sort of faithfulness, to me is very potent to tell a good story. And I think what is possible there is you can have a lot of powerful side effects. And that's certainly been my experience, like astonishing side effects as far as like the way that they've worked in people's hearts that I never would have been clever enough to like invent or manufacture. That's been that's like a humbling kind of a gift because it feels like grace and it doesn't feel like calculation. It feels like an invitation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always amazing to me how God can take a heart of love for somebody. And when he calls us to something and he gives us that love and then he equips us for that thing, how he can do with that infinitely more than we could ever have understood or even begun to ask for, because he is so much bigger and greater than we, like we talked about earlier, than we could even wrap our minds around. And his ways are not our ways and his thoughts are not our thoughts. And they are so much bigger and so much greater. And I think sometimes we can, you know, those verses in Isaiah 55 are ones that I go back to often. And I think it can be sometimes felt like, oh, it's negative because God's not, he doesn't think like us. But I think of it, it's the most positive, incredible reality we could ever enter into, that we can follow a God who thinks so much bigger, whose ways are so much greater, because in that we can get lost in a story that is truly the greatest story that's ever been told. And it's a wonder to see what God will do with faithfulness and love and a heart that's ready to follow him. And I think that's what is so amazing about what you've done in your ministry and your stories. And you love your readers. You loved your kids and that's what started you. And then every book I've read of yours, you can feel that heart of love for the reader coming through. And that touches people's lives. It really does. And it's through God's grace alone. But I love that. And I love your humility in it because you've had great success with your stories, but yet you clearly have a desire to honor God and to love your readers through it. And It's wonderful. It's one of the reasons I was excited to have you on my podcast, because I want to be able to highlight authors like you who have just this heart and also incredible stories to back it up. It's not just the heart, then a really terrible book. You know, these books are great. So,
I mean, it sounds like I'm a pretty great guy, honestly.
I mean, that's what I know, I'm, Sam, that's did what you I'm know?
No, I love that. That's very kind of you to say. And it's been so much of a gift. I love that. Like something I talk about sort of in some talks I'll give, I'll talk about like sort of three foundational bricks, and I could go into detail more about them, but I think of them as these three bricks of building sort of your writing life or your career, or your life, a creative life, whatever. I think of them as these three words. Let's start with M, F, and A, and that's modesty, fidelity, and audacity. Mm-hmm. That there's a sort of like a modest, God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble, that there's sort of like a ought to be, I think, or I want to be for myself, a modest disposition toward life, understanding that I wasn't clever enough to figure this out, or I, you know, that there's so much of, you know, a man cannot receive even one thing unless it is given to him from heaven. And that is a fact. Like, so I there's a sort of like a necessary modesty. And then there's this fidelity, I think, is really important, like of being faithful to Christ and being, knowing who I am in him. Like, that's my identity. That's who I am. That's I'm operating out of that. So I can't, which is sort of it's more of a key than a cage, I think. There are constraints that come along with that. I don't want to turn my back on Jesus. That's fundamental. So modesty, fidelity. And then because of those two things, audacity. And that's what I think is really fun, is that like you then go for it, you know, like, there's what's holding us back. Like try, swing for the fences, like go for it, try to do something cool. And why not? Because the pressure, the sort of the whole, operation isn't on us. So it's not all falling to us, but there's this invitation to us. Mm-hmm. So I love that. It's a pretty cool place to be in the story of like, well, you can really try something cool, or you can try difficult things and go for it. But the pressure isn't on you, because the story is fine. The the actual author is good. Yeah. he's okay. And the hero's okay. He's not going to fail. You know, he's better than any hero you've ever written or imagined. Yeah. So you're okay. You can kind of operate with this liberty. So I love that. I love being operating with a certain degree of audacity.
Yeah.
That only makes sense to me if it's rooted in modesty and fidelity.
It's amazing how things that seem like they could be limiting could actually bring us into a place that gives us freedom to do more than we could have ever done if we didn't start with those two things, you know, because audacity without modesty and fidelity is going to be a problem. But with those things, it takes you into a broad place where, you know, nothing is impossible with God. And if he's bringing us there, he can do the impossible. And it's incredible to watch him work. And then you just kind of come back to that modesty thing, because you're like, that is not me, you know, like even with the audacity, you still realize like the end results couldn't possibly be anything but something he's done.
It's true. But you'd also don't want to fall off the ditch on the other side of the road of like saying that there's like nothing to, because God, you know, he cares about people. And I mean, Christ became a man. I mean, there is a glory in man. I mean, if you believe the scriptures, there's something, he's doing something with mankind. That's like the whole thing of Lewis talking about, like, if we would see each other in the future, like we would be tempted to worship. Like, I think that's true. And I think that doesn't change any of the stuff about humility or being deferential about sort of the root of it. But God's doing something with us, and we almost like may as well. So I think it's Lewis, the one that said that if God is pleased with something, we may as well be pleased ourselves. That like we don't have to like pretend like we're worms. You know, I think Lewis has got a really good approach on that. That there's the sort of between the worm and the glorious God, that we're sort of somewhere in between. I mean, he talked about us being the donkey, brother ass. He said that's like no one can take it to be too mad at it or too impressed with it. But there is something. God's doing something with us. Yeah. You know, that he's telling a story in us that is glorious. I don't know. And sometimes you watch other brothers or sisters or believers that are doing some things that are special or that the Lord is working in, and not necessarily famous people, but like, yeah. You know, there's, I don't know, you sometimes you encounter holiness, like, and you encounter goodness, you encounter truth, you encounter in ways that you get this really not good view of like, wow, the Lord is good and he's doing something, like he's active and yeah. There's stuff happening here that's powerful. So anyway, I think you're right. And I tend to really lean on that side of things. But God is at work and what he is making of his children is beautiful and glorious. And we can't imagine how good, you know, that every tribe and tongue you talked about earlier, like that's the kingdom of God is coming. Like it, we pray your kingdom come, your will be done. Like he's not saying, I don't think so. No, he's like, yes, that is. Yeah. I mean, he has won, he's winning and he's going to win. His kingdom's coming, every tribe and tongue. It's going to be pretty, I'm for it.
Yes.
I'm excited about it. Yeah. I'm like, let's get this thing fully. Let's get all the way to the, you know, consummation, the renewal of all things. I'm in for that.
Me too. Amen. Let's do it.
I didn't mean to turn your whole podcast into this, Christian conversation about, big things here, but sorry, it happened.
Yeah.
It happened, CJ. We couldn't.
This is what, you know, I always want this to just be a place where we can talk about big things. If that's where it'll go, I love it. So I loved this conversation. It was great. And I, unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we'll have to wrap up soon, but I loved getting to go there. And like I said earlier, hearing the heart of you, the author behind the stories, because sometimes we just read the books and don't know how deep the heart of the author goes for the reader. And to hear your heart for your readers is a special thing. And I'm glad my listeners are getting that glimpse. And the big things are what make the small things worthwhile. You know, that big reality, that's what makes the littlest parts of our day actually something that have meaning, because that's what we're living for. And every little thing can be wrapped up in that massive, incredible thing that is coming if we'll let God do that, and if we'll submit to him and live that audacious life. Audacious is the right word, right?
You're right. You got it. You must be a writer.
Hey, you know, a writer who can't always pronounce the words, you know, but hey, whatever.
Oh, my goodness, me too. If you saw my manuscripts riddled with 50,000 mistakes. It's like, do you speak English? Is English your first language, Sam? I don't know.
That's why we have editors, right?
an army of editors. Yes. Thank you so much, CJ. This was really, this was a wonderful time. I'm so grateful for your having me on here. Yeah. Thanks for letting me ramble and having this conversation. I enjoyed our conversation.
I enjoyed it immensely, Sam. And could you, before we wrap up, could you just let our readers know where they can connect with you and find your books?
I don't think I can. I'd like to remain mysterious. And I think like a little goose hunt, like just go, just get out there and see what happens. You know, I think I'm kind of excited by the journey of them trying. No, I'm kidding. Sorry. SDSmith.com is probably, you can find everything there.
Perfect. Perfect. And sign up for Sam's newsletter, because that's a great way to stay in touch with everything he's doing and all that's going on as well. But he's also got books on his website you can purchase. So make sure, since he's not giving you this whole ramble, I'm going to tell you for him. Make sure you get on there and you can hear more about what he's doing. But Sam, thank you so much for being on the show. It was really a blessing to have you here today.
Thanks, CJ. I had a great time. I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this conversation with SD Smith. I had a great time talking with Sam, chatting about stories, and hearing more of his heart for his readers. If you're looking for a fantastical adventure where good battles evil and the heroes learn what it means to truly be heroes, you'll love the Waylander books. And I encourage you to check out his Green Ember series as well. Sam's stories are fantastic. As you've probably noticed, the podcast was on a bit of a break for the past couple of months, but we are now back and running with season 2 of Read Clean YA with CJ. I am so excited about some of the guests we have coming up this season, and I would love to hear from you, my listeners, about who you would like to hear on this podcast. You can email me at cj@cjmalacy.com and let me know if there are authors you'd like me to interview or books you want me to dive into and talk more about. And just share your thoughts on what you'd like next in this season of Read Clean YA with CJ. I would love to hear from you. This coming season, I'll be chatting with a couple of middle grade authors as well as young adult authors, and I'm excited to share all of these stories with you and any of my younger listeners. You can expect to find new episodes every other week for this season. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult books too.